ball spark.
You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour as we've got all kinds of stuff to discuss. I want to talk about the state of college football, specifically the NIL and the law of intended consequences and where college football is headed. Did you see what's happening at Texas with the NIL?
Texas, no.
They are essentially creating a nonprofit organization to pay their players.
Okay.
Specifically offensive linemen. Hearts for horns. Now, here's the caveat, though. They are, with the way that this is going down, they're going to pay these guys $50,000 a year. But they're also obligated to go out and do charity work on behalf of that 501(c).
Gotcha.
It's an incredible idea as far as a workaround to be able to pay players.
Sure,
now,
sure.
At the same time, I also think it's an incredible idea just because.
Well, yeah.
Because it at least makes the players and the athletes accountable for something good.
Nothing wrong with that.
As opposed to just kind of being the face of an advertising campaign. I think it's super interesting, but it does have tentacles connecting to the school. So there's just a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
What does the good outweigh the bad? And where does this leave college football and what kind of lurch? Because, I mean, I don't think that either one of us believed that the NIL had nothing to do with. Yeah. With what. I don't think that we can believe that it has nothing to do with what's happening coaching wise, player movement wise. And all that, you know what I'm saying? I think this is all intertwined, and I think it all gets back to the NIL in a certain way.
Yeah, I've always said that. I've always said, yeah.
But now what happens? I guess is where does this go? Because this isn't. I don't believe this is going to your dad's and your granddad's college football is over.
Oh yeah.
And so you know where
our college day college football.
Yeah, that's over. True. Yeah, I mean it's more of
don't forget, man. You're over 40. I'm pushing it. We're up there too.
Hey. Enough of that, Jared. So anyway, we can talk about that. Some NFL stuff that we didn't get to yesterday as well, and then the high school basketball. Whoa, craziness last night. I think we may have a call in.
Really?
From somebody that was in the gym at Blair. To tell us, to detail what was going on. Our old buddy Cal.
Oh, he was there.
Our old buddy Cal may be calling in to tell us, give us his view of what happened. We both just saw the video there in the Sarah and Blair game that we could discuss coming up here off the top of the show. Also, a bunch of other high school hoops, Elk City and Clinton. That boys game was a fantastic one between the Elks and the Red Tornadoes. Five county conference first round games are over. We'll update that bracket, tell you what happened yesterday and what to look forward to tomorrow and Friday. That's what we got on tap. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple of ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is to log on to KADSAM.com. The other is download the Paragon Communications app. That app has all things Paragon. It's got three radio stations with Cool 94, KECO, and us right here on KADS. It's got the Penny News in the app. You can check out all the deals online, thepennynews.com. brand new edition of the Penny News hit the website last night at midnight. So a refreshed copy of this week's Penny News is available as we speak on the Paragon app. We've also got Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. The Elks and Elkettes hit the road for the first time on Friday night at Jones. Tough ask with the defending 3A girls state champs, Jones Lady Longhorns, for the Elkettes.
I saw one of their games last year.
Did you really?
When I helped out with the network yet that we will not name.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Went in, engineered a game, and saw able to see them. They were good.
I'm hoping like 4 of those 6'3"-ers graduated because they had like 4 of them.
Yes. They didn't look like a little team from Jones. They look legit.
Yeah, that was an impressive squad last year. You could see why they were in the hunt and actually won the state title. Paragon TV as well in the app. And, of course, the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, you can go back and check us out on KADSAM or iTunes. The iTunes route, you can subscribe, and then a new podcast, when it drops, you will be alerted. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
I'm a little bit kind of frazzled as I was gathering info to start. I'd kind of heard through the grapevine that there was a little tussle down in Blair, and then I decided, you know what, I'm going to look and see what happened. And then I looked and saw what happened, and it just, for the last 30 minutes, went by in about 2. So I'm still kind of trying to gather information as far as the games. Why don't you? Do you have the updated bracket in the 5-county conference tournament?
I do. I apologize, but I don't have scores for all of them.
I'll find them as you say.
Okay.
Are you going to start on the girls' side?
I'll start in chronological order. No, I'll just start on the girls'
there
side.
There was just one girls'
really
game,
just
right?
Just one game, right. Canute girls took on Leedy. Canute won. I didn't even write down the score. I just wrote down that Abby Janning had 15 points.
46-22.
46. It was close at half, and then Canute came out.
Oh, my gosh. Leedy didn't score very many points in the second half.
It was like 18-12, I think, at half.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and then Canute came out. Word on the grapevine is Coach Riddling broke some stuff in the locker room and got him fired up. It might be stuff that they brought, just to be clear. They didn't break Sentinel stuff.
Well, it might still be hers. I mean, she was the coach there last year. She might have left it in there for that, just to make a point to her team this year.
I know Ryan listening. He'll probably text and tell me what was exactly broke. But Canute, they looked good in the second half. Again, Abby Janning, the senior, who is playing like a senior this year. I mean, so I've always been proud of her defense, but her offense has come on as of late. They'll take on Arapahoe Butler because Arapahoe Butler basically got a bye. Sweetwater didn't have enough players for their game yesterday. I don't know why, but I have been told Sweetwater will play on Friday. So if it was a COVID situation.
Maybe had some coming out of quarantine.
Or injury or I don't know, but they will play. So Leedy's going to play at 6:40. There's my phone. Leedy's going to play at 6:40.
I bet you I know who it is if both of our phones are going off at the same time.
But it was a marker. She broke a marker. That was it. Leedy will play Sweetwater at 6:40. Canute and Arapahoe Butler girls, that's such an intriguing game to me.
How did she – we're burying the lead. How did she break a marker? She's strong enough to just rip a marker in half?
Well, you think if you break it with your hand, you're going to get ink
all over the place. Yeah.
So I'm assuming she threw it.
Okay. All right, carry on.
Just assume. I might be careful here because she might throw something at me next time I see her. So I'm going to be really careful. But whatever she broke, however she did it, it worked because Canute came alive in the second
half. Figure out what color and what brand it was and get her a whole sack full of those.
Put
in
her stocking. Yeah, exactly. Right. Arapahoe Butler in Canute Thursday at 6:40. Arapahoe Butler coming in at ranked 6th. And a lot of aspirations for them. And that game, that semifinal game will be fun. The other semifinal game, Merritt and Sentinel at 4 o'clock. Girls or boys bracket, Hammond boys, they came alive. I had a feeling that game would be good, but watching it, it really wasn't. Canute got within striking distance a few times, but Hammond put them away. I mean, just kind of kept them at arm's length and shot the ball really well from what I saw. I was going in and out. I was at my kids' practice, but Hammond advances. Jackson Beck, the freshman phenom for Canute, continues to go off. He had 25 points for that young man in the losing effort. So Hammond and Merritt will play Thursday at 8. The first semifinal is Arapahoe Butler boys, who defeated Sweetwater pretty handily. Now, the Sweetwater boys played.
Yeah, 76-44 on that game, 65-53 on the Canute game.
Again, that doesn't tell me it's COVID. Because you would think a lot of – anyways – Sweetwater, small school. I don't know. And then, yeah, Sentinel will play Arapahoe Butler. So semifinals are set, and that'll pick up tomorrow.
Yeah, all the winners will play Thursday. The teams that lost the first round play Friday. And as I said yesterday, the best thing in my mind about the five-county tournament is that on Friday, in order to play Saturday, you have to win Friday. You have to win a game in the first two to be able to play on Saturday. I think that is fantastic instead of having a 7th and 8th place game for two teams that probably don't want to be there by that point, losing two games in a row in a week. They don't get to come. And so you have a consolation winner, you have a third place winner, and you have a champion. And the 7th and 8th place trophy doesn't get made. I love that. I absolutely love that there's a carrot out there for winning in one of these tournaments as opposed to just showing up three times and getting three games in. That's my favorite part of the five county. Plus, it's normally really, really good basketball. I saw some pretty good basketball last night inside the Pioneer Center, especially in that boys game.
I caught some of that.
As it was back and forth. But to start, the Elkettes just went through a stretch in the second and third quarter where they couldn't make a shot, and Clinton took advantage of it. I was super impressed with the ancillary parts of Clinton's team versus the last couple of years. Kiana Ford, Tiella Johnson, Ra Ra Washington. Though they really complemented what Carmella Jefferson is so good at doing. And to me, Carmella was, it was the first game of her senior year. I thought she was super duper under control, more than I may have seen her in the past. The Elkettes were baiting her into taking long threes with the way they were defending her, and she wouldn't take the bait. Instead, she was patient, got into the paint. I don't know how many times she kind of split the two out top of the 2-3 zone and either pulled up and made a jump shot from the free throw line, not continuing in where maybe she gets her shot blocked, trying to create fouls. She was just comfortable with stopping at the free throw line and knocking down jumper. She made a couple of threes. But she was so under control, and I think that allowed the rest of her team to be super competent. And when she was able to get into the lane, and she almost can at any point, she's that quick and that really skilled with the basketball. But then when Ford can knock down threes, I think she hit three last night, if I remember right, and then Johnson hit a three. You know, that is such a huge part of that offense. And listen, they beat Elk City 42-26 without Micaiah Lovelace hardly playing. She got in foul trouble. She did not score a point. And Clinton still beat Elk City by 16. So kudos to, Ford and Johnson. And then, of course, Jefferson was awesome. On the Elkette side, Haley Bowie got off to a really nice start with 6 in the first quarter. Elk City dominated the offensive glass in the first quarter. As you know, they didn't shoot the ball at all basically all night. But in the first quarter, they are able to kind of negate that poor shooting by just chasing down their misses and getting to the free throw line and pounding the offensive glass. That kind of stopped in the second and third quarters. Clinton did a better job of limiting Elk City to a shot. I thought the Elkettes got good looks, which didn't make them. It was one of those nights where the ball wasn't going in the basket. Then as the game kind of got hectic a little bit, it clearly favors what the Red Tornadoes do, trying to get the game sped up. And they kind of got the Elkettes out of their comfort zone. And next thing you know, it was a deficit that Elk City couldn't overcome. And the boys' game, man, it was a good one. It was back and forth. The largest lead for either team until right there at the end. Elk City jumped out 5-0. I think Clinton's largest lead was 7 as the game was played. And then it came down to the last 3 or 4 minutes. I thought the biggest shot of the game was from a guy that, if I'm on the Elk City side, I let him take, and that was Jeremiah Barker, the sophomore, from the top of the key. I think it was 51-50. Elk City was down one, and Barker just uncorks one from the top of the key for three, and he drained it. Credit to him, hitting a big shot. But when you look out there, if you're Coach Stevens and your choices are one of the two Crumleys, Caden Powell, taking shots, you let Barker take that one all day long, and if he makes it, you tip your cap and you move on, and that's exactly what happened. He knocked it down. The Elks got it back within two, but then I think it was 54-52 with 2.5 minutes left or so, and then Clinton scored 7 straight and blew the lead out to 9 at one point, 61-52, and they end up winning 65-58. It was a fun game, a well-played game. Contrary to what I'm seeing on Facebook, I thought it was a heck of an officiated game. Let the guys play without it becoming what happened down at Blair, to be quite honest. I know it was a you got two teams with a bunch of athletes running up and down the floor, and credit to Leland and Zach and Josh for letting those guys play the game of basketball and not try to rein it in and make it choppy with every single foul being called throughout the night. So I've seen some differentiating report or opinions than that. But whatever, that's fine. Everybody can view it how they want to. For me, it was a lot more enjoyable to watch those guys be able to go up and down the floor, be able to, you know, be physical with each other without it going over any type of line.
There was nothing
like what we saw on that video.
Clinton and Elk, are they destined to play tough games, tight games, good games in any sport?
You know, it's interesting.
After that semifinal in football and now this one.
It's interesting talking to somebody after the game. And he said, you know, isn't it amazing how much a good football season can jumpstart every other thing?
Yeah, conventional wisdom would tell you that the Clinton was going to be sluggish.
I'm talking about on the Elk City side.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I'm talking about the Elk City side. Clinton too. That's fine.
I thought we were saying about Clinton because they just came off a title and then they're, you know.
Well, they have everybody coming back. I mean,
what practice did they have?
I'd say everybody. Atrell's not there anymore. Right. But yeah, it was an interesting mix of guys that have been in the gym and guys that have been on the football field.
Yeah.
You know, because
You got the
Crumleys have been in the gym.
Yeah.
Chaz Rivers was a guy that I don't remember his name in football. That he was first off the bench that looked like he'd been playing some basketball. And then you got those other guys. You know, Powell had, 14 or 16 last night? And you could tell that he was rusty.
Yeah.
Which just, if you're a Clinton fan, has to excite you because he missed a couple point blank. Now, Joseph Daly was there to help miss those shots, standing there at 6'5", and you know, blocking every shot that's around when he can. But – you know, Clinton's a team that they've been kind of building for last year and this year. You know, they made the area tournament a couple of times here over the last little bit. And so, you know, I think they're destined to make a pretty decent run this year. The Crumleys were fantastic. Jackson had 21. Harrison had 14 or 16. One of those two. Either Powell had 14 and he had 16 or vice versa. But three in double figures for Clinton on the Elk City side. Three in double figures there as well. Kai Keyes, the junior, has really stepped up. And he's making shots the way that, you know, he needs to for this team to score the basketball the way it does. And, you know, thinking back to last year, you know, 58 in a loss, I'm not sure if the Elks were able to score 58 in any game, if I remember. I mean, that's a good number for Elk City because, you know, that's 15 a quarter. That'll win you most games.
Yeah.
Throughout the season. But Clinton was just a little bit too much last night. And so the Red Tornadoes and the Lady Reds go to 1-0. Hellcats fall to 2-1. The Elks 1-2, but on the Elk City side, on the boys' side at least, that's a 1-2 where you feel like you had a chance to win every game and probably should have beat Pampa.
Right.
You know, moving forward. Hey, I think we have. Okay, so let's set this up while I make
I'll
sure
try.
This is
I mean,
Cal.
I'm still trying to figure out what exactly happened down in Blair. I guess Sayre went to Blair, and I thought Blair played their games over at Western College. Bigger facility there, bigger gym, but according to the video, they did not.
It got a little chippy. All right, man,
on the court.
I'm set you down here.
Late into the second quarter, and then it boiled over into the fourth. And we had a guy that was there. You got him all set up. It's our man Cal.
It's our man Orlando. Cal, what's up, dude?
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Hey, we're doing good, man. We were watching. I'd heard a little bit about what happened last night after the Elk City game was over. And then doing some investigation, looking at the video from the Sayre broadcast. You were there. What in the world was going on down in Blair last night?
Well, in the first half, there was a technical foul on Blair, number 14. He, after he got fouled, he decided to run down the lane and dunk it anyways. So Coach Smith from Blair and the Blair crowd, of course, wanted a technical foul for unsportsmanlike conduct, pretty much. And then the coaches started yelling at each other, and so they get pulled apart. So right now, right there was some intensity in the crowd and then in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second half started, and the fourth quarter, it was a four-point lead for Sayre, about 3:41 left to go, and the coach from Sayre decided to call just to run the clock down. Caleb Castillo from Blair decided to run up to foul the guy. His momentum carried him fast, and he hit the Sarah player knocked him on the ground. It wasn't intentional. You could tell the way he reacted. He fell onto the ground. Well, number 14 ran up over Castillo, and then that's when Logan Torres decided to run up and push him down. And then that's when the crowd decided to play a part in it and get on the court, and players emptied off the bench. A parent was slinging around a kid from Sarah. It was just a total situation that could have been avoided if the parents did not run up from the crowd.
Well, that's my question is, why play it there? I thought they played a lot of games at the college there in Altus at Western. Last time I called a game versus Blair, it was at that facility. Was it because they moved it there last season because they wanted to spread people out because of COVID, or does Blair usually play their home games in that tiny gym? Because I think that did not help things.
No, because you had fans sitting right next to the bench, and then you had fans. They had some couple fans from Blair fans coming up and talking smack, and they had to get the Highway Patrol and county sheriffs in there to make sure those kids got safely into the locker room, because you had to walk by where those people were sitting.
Yeah, I mean, as ugly as it looked, I really think it could have been so much worse. After the foul was made and things kind of escalated. I thought the coaching staffs did a pretty good job of separating everybody and quite honestly, some of the players from fans that had made their way on the floor.
Yeah. Some of the players were trying to get their friends off, and a couple of kids were thrown to the ground by other players. But Art Smith, he's one of the best officials here in the Southwest Oklahoma. He gained control of it pretty quickly. It did take forever to figure out who needed to be ejected and what technical fouls had to be assessed to the situation. So they added on about 10 to 15 minutes of the game. That kind of let the crowd simmer down a little bit. But they said the Highway Patrol was called in to let people out of the building and making sure the Sarah kids had a way to get back to the locker room and to the bus safely.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. As things were being kind of sorted out, it did feel like it de-escalated things, because even the emotion from the players on the floor once play started back up, it didn't have that supercharged feel to it emotionally that it did leading up to the foul there at half court.
No, it did not. And like I said, the foul wasn't intentional. I've covered Caleb Castillo for the past 3 years, and he's been nothing but a role model student athlete. He was just running fast, and accidents happen on the court and in any game where it looks worse than what it is, and that's when people started to get angry. And being in a small area, small gym, it made it 100 times worse than what it should have been.
Yeah, I think you're right. With the fans, you could see like literally sitting on the bench on the Blair side. It was just such a small area that they're so close to
when
it.
When they stood up, they were on the court.
Standing up to cheer, you're standing on the court there in that one corner.
And that's not the best situation for it at all. They could have gone up to the top level where everybody else was at, or even the other side of the gym, the other side of the court. It's right on the court as well. There's not much room there. It is an old school gym. I think Blair can use it to their advantage some games, but for a situation like that happened last night, it could have been a whole lot worse. And I'm a parent. I have kids that play sports, and I always got to make sure I keep it in check. And I cover sports, and my girl asked me, like, would you cover games for your son? I'm like, it'd be kind of hard to do because emotions, as y'all know, emotions go crazy when your kid's on the court or on the field.
Absolutely. Hey, man, how's it been going? I hadn't spoken to you since the state tournament maybe last year.
I've been busy just keeping football. Came in busy. Tipton and Snyder were they made playoff runs, and now I'm full into basketball. And now they gave me an extra hour to the show out here in Altus, so they're really getting their money's worth.
That's kind of the way that goes, though, right?
Yes, sir. If any teams go out there to Tri-County Tournament, I'll be there, and I'll expect Aaron or Jared to buy me lunch.
Hey, listen, I think the Elks are in the Altus short grass, maybe not the Tri-County. So,
no, I don't cover Altus. I cover the Blair.
The smaller ones. Yeah, I don't think we're Tri-County, but I think we're the Altus short grass Invitational. So it won't be me, but maybe Jared will be down there, and he can buy you lunch.
Well, Merritt is right down the street. So,
hey, we'll have to hook you up with Jess's number, right?
There you go.
Yes, sir. Hey, Cal.
Anybody but me. I don't want to. I'm kidding. I'll gladly buy you lunch. Just, you know, stick to the kids menu or something.
The dollar menu. I can definitely do that.
The value menu. Yes.
Hey, six things off of that, still $6. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, Cal, thanks so much for filling us in on what you saw down there at Blair last night. Really appreciate it, dude. All right. See you, man.
See ya.
Bye, guys.
Orlando.
The coolest name in Southwest radio.
Orlando Calamaco.
Yes. Yeah, I forgot that he covers Blair.
Yeah, he's kind of all over down there.
Yeah. I'm trying to be very careful with my words, but Blair needs a bigger gym. Or they got to find a different situation. Because I think that it's the first thing I saw was how small the facility was. You got to know the heat was cranked up because it was a cold night. I mean, it just doesn't help things. People right on top of the court, literally standing on the court at times.
Yeah, I mean.
That does not help things.
Yeah, as far as the parents go that ended up on the floor, they didn't have far to go. One step and they were there.
Now, did I hear that right? A parent grabbed a player. Was a parent grabbing an opposing player? Or was just grabbing their own kid?
I am not sure.
That, to me, is a big no-no.
We will have to go back and look.
Yeah.
Having said all of that, and I know what you're saying, and I totally agree with what you're saying, but I will say this. Things de-escalated just as fast as they escalated, because that could have been a way uglier scene.
Worse across the country. You've seen viral videos and all that stuff. You've seen worse. Absolutely. Could have got really, really bad, but yeah. I think it did de-escalate rather quickly.
And I wonder.
That's good.
And honestly, I wonder if parents getting out there, and I know on the Sarah side, some of those quote unquote parents that were in street clothes were school officials. You're talking about coaches and superintendents and principals and stuff like that. So, you know, that probably does help getting those folks involved. Johnny and Susie's dad, you know, that can lead to bad things. But at least on the, and I'm not saying it wasn't the same way on the Blair side. Don't get me wrong. I just happen to know those people,
right,
that were out there for Sayre, and that was school officials as opposed to just some guy's, you know, parent of a kid. And it might have been both, but at the same time, kudos to those people because they conducted themselves as a school official first and as an upset parent second. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And so that's the way it was, at least on that side. But yeah, it's a crazy thing. And then that's like you said, I mean, you're right about one thing. I mean, unfortunately in this time and with the funding and all that, I don't know that Blair just has enough money to start building gyms and whatnot. They're probably just trying to keep the school afloat if we're being honest. But that also, there's no doubt that being that close to the action, you know, I think of it at the old, you know, something like that could have and did happen at the old Elk City gym where I went to high school.
Yeah.
Because everybody was right on the floor.
Yeah.
It's hard to.
And that was such a fun atmosphere.
It was great.
The small gym atmosphere is awesome. And that what Elk City played in years ago was, I mean, as a Clinton student, I always look forward coming over here, like, to team camps and playing in that gym. And you know, watching the varsity play in that gym. It's just the atmosphere that it created was really, really fun, you know. But yeah, I mean.
It's hard to imagine anything happening in the Pioneer Center.
Oh, no, you're so, yeah. I mean,
it's so much more sterile and so bigger, and you have to open a gate to get on the court. You know what I mean? It's hard to imagine.
Like, I'm going to go in the court. Oh, I got to go through a gate and walk down all
the way. And then get back up those stairs.
Yeah, I'm too lazy to fight.
40.
I'm too lazy to be confrontational like that.
There was last night a funny moment, and listen, it just told you about the rivalry of Elk City and Clinton, but. Middle into the third quarter, maybe or so. There was a timeout on the floor, and so the cheerleaders kind of had like a backhand spring off, I guess.
Okay,
you know, where they just flip down the floor, and the lady, the gal from Clinton, she made it from the baseline clear across half court to almost the other free throw line, which is headed toward the students of Elk City, right?
Okay.
From the one end.
Gotcha.
If you're watching on our view, left to right.
Right, gotcha.
And she gets done, and she it's awesome. I don't know how many she did. 6, 8, 10, whatever it was, backhand springs all in a row. She stops at the free throw line, holds her hands up like a gymnast, and all the Elk City students start booing. I was like, now that's what I'm talking about. See Elk City Clinton love for you right there when the cheerleaders.
Listen,
if
that's as bad as it get, that's
yeah,
fine. That's what
totally
a rivalry
harmless
is. Yeah,
I'm sure tongue in cheek, all at the same
if
time.
If I did that, I would have fallen down from being dizzy,
yes,
or maybe thrown up on the court.
I almost did just watching. All right, that's high school hoops. Fun night last night, crazy night last night in some locations. And it's just getting started.
Yes.
Still got like 2 months more of this.
I don't want to see player schedule. Who else do they play?
All right.
We might have to have Cal on after every Blair game.
Yeah, let's hope not. All right, not for his sake, but just for that. I started to see this news filter out, as Jared was talking about last night, but Bruce Feldman, he's been on top of every single stench of any college football coaching searches, moves. He's kind of become the Woj or the Shams of college football, the way that he breaks these news. 5 minutes ago, his tweet says, source, Ole Miss offense coordinator, play caller Jeff Lebby, is expected to become the next offense coordinator at Oklahoma. Lebby's an Oklahoma grad, former Sooner staffer. 247 Sports first reported the move. And so that good news, I think, on the Caleb Williams front, or at least as good a news as you could hope for. Now we'll see what he thinks of that hire, what he thinks of Jeff Lebby's ability to make him as good a quarterback as he can be, and if that means he's going to stay at Oklahoma or go somewhere else. Also last night, as the high school basketball was being played up and down the hardwood, more news was reported as far as filling out a Brent Venables staff, and a couple of familiar names are coming back to Oklahoma. One of those in the capacity that he was there before, another former player that is kind of an assistant of Jerry Schmidt. So Schmitty, as he was so affectionately known, he was one of the very first hires Bob Stoops made all the way back in 99. He came along with that original crew, was here forever, went down to A&M a couple of years ago as the strength coach. Jerry Schmidt is coming back to be the strength coach, and joining him on his staff, a former player and a former Weatherfordite, Russell Dennison, will be,
I heard
will
rumors
be coming.
About that.
He was down there. I didn't realize he was down there at A&M. So he's.
I thought he was at Wyoming last I heard.
No, that's ag. I mean, this is a thing I got last night. Let me read it exactly. That way I can get it right. I'm told A&M sports performance coach Russell Dennison is also expected to be hired by Oklahoma along with Jerry Schmidt. So both of those guys returning to Oklahoma. And so Russell Dennison, obviously, special teamer, a big-time player at Weatherford in high school that went to OU and succeeded there, will be back as well. So, you know, it almost in some ways it feels like the band's getting back together at Oklahoma with Venables coming back and obviously Schmitty and some of those former players with Joe John Finley, now with Russell Dennison, DeMarco Murray, Cale Gundy's been there the whole time. And then in other ways, I think we're going to see a little bit different philosophy of way of doing things, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I had been told by somebody that knows the guy that the defense coordinator at Troy, Brandon Hall, is going to be going to come back and coach DBs, somebody that was at school with him back in the day. I actually talked to him. So that hasn't been announced. That hadn't been announced yet, but that's what I was told a day or so ago. To look for that. And then, obviously, I guess the defense coordinator spot is still there and filling out the rest of the defensive coaching staff. But it's starting to take shape, at least in the last couple of days following the announcement of Brent Venables hiring at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I it's when that news came down about Schmitty, you saw a lot of reaction from former players. I think when they heard that, they all kind of shuddered like, oh. I can remember him yelling at me. I can remember him making me do this or do that. One tweet, I don't know who said he was on the stairs, which is like one of those stairs.
I think it was Wes
things.
Sims. Wes Sims. About the guy that left and you never saw him
said
again
he
10
saw
years.
Saw a guy next to him and he left and didn't see him for another 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Schmitty's going to do is he's going to wean out the weak and he's going to make the strong stronger. And I think that's something that OU fans have been screaming for, especially after this season, is to get rid of the soft. And I think when he was on campus in charge of the strength and conditioning of the players, you saw a toughness. Even in losses, you saw a toughness on with that team, that program. I think that's what OU is clamoring for, is try to get that toughness to return. I mean, it was clear by hiring Venables to get him back. And now he's kind of getting the gang back together and getting some OU guys back on campus. And again, that goes back to the safe hire mentality. You're not expecting them to want to bolt as quick as the last guy did. So it's an interesting move and encouraging and, again, safe. But, you know, I kind of look at it like, okay, kind of a reunion. And next year is going to be the reunion tour. You ever see a band in a reunion tour? And you're like, all right, it's good to see these guys. But are they still as good as they once were? Right? Were they good? You know, they were good back then. Are they still good now? Are they going to be the Eagles now? Or this is pretty dang good. It's the hottest ticket in America right now to go see the Eagles. Or are they going to be Smash Mouth, where the lead singer is incoherent on the stage and ridiculously bad? We'll have to find out come September.
I think it's interesting in the philosophy and from the fans themselves with this news of Jerry Schmidt, because toward the end of his tenure, it felt like he was being blamed for a lot of things going wrong with Oklahoma, injuries included.
No, I remember that.
And so, you know, now it's like, hey, yay, he's back and all that. And it's like, huh?
He's an easy target when it comes down to injuries.
What a little bit of softness infiltrating the program to change some minds of some people, just a couple of short years in between. But I mean, the proof of what he did in his early time at Oklahoma is in the pudding. I mean, there is no doubt that, you know, part of the reason for that transformation from a team that was had three straight losing seasons in a 500 year under Schnellenberger, 2 years later turned into the undefeated national champions. And, oh, by the way, one thing that I think is completely underrated, and in some of it's luck, there's no doubt about that. But what was the main cause of Oklahoma winning that national championship that year?
Health.
And that can be directly attributed to Jerry Schmidt at that time. Now, did he fall behind the times in some things and do old school things for new school players? Maybe so. Who knows? But I do know this. There wasn't many times where in any point where he was there, where Stoops was there together, that there was the word soft being thrown around.
Never heard that.
The Oklahoma program. And no. So I think this is a return to some of that with him and of course Russell Dennison. You wonder if that's kind of the old school, new school mentality a little bit merging into one with the guy that had to go through the workouts that Schmidt did on OU's campus in Denison and then taking that and molding it around to what he's learning as science evolves type of thing. If you're not going to see a little bit of that kind of a yin and yang approach with those two guys.
It could be Schmidt saying, you know what, I'm going to go back. I'm going to give him X amount of years and call it quits and hand it over to Russell Dennison. It's kind of like, you know, Stoops and the Riley situation. Maybe Russell Dennison is the heir apparent to lead the strength and conditioning program.
Yeah, an interesting couple of things. You know, Bob and tongue-in-cheek or maybe just a shot on Saturday in the pregame when he was talking about, you know, going back in the office.
Wasn't he fantastic?
I think it was Charles Woodson that said, what do you mean? You still got an office? He goes, well, I built it.
Yeah, without hesitation. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was fantastic.
And the truth
he handled
is,
that well.
And the truth is, Jerry Schmidt built what is OU Strength and Conditioning. The facility is what I'm talking about back in 2017.
Yeah.
He designed it. He got it built. That's all his stuff. So he ought to feel pretty comfortable back in that arena at Oklahoma.
More coaching news that just came across me about 30 minutes ago. I don't know if you've seen this. This is all from the rumor mill. Miguel Chavez,
listen,
see this? Defensive line
his Twitter,
development coach at Clemson.
His Twitter says OU coach.
Defensive end coach?
Yes, I just don't know if it's a fake account or not. I was just looking at this.
Yeah, I have to really watch that one.
Yeah, Coach Miguel Chavez, follower and servant of Jesus Christ, husband to Meg M. Chavez, daddy to four awesome kids, defensive end coach at OU football.
I have to be pretty low for someone to make a fake account just to –
yeah, and it's got it's got a picture of him and kids.
Yeah, I hope that's true. I hope that's accurate. I mean,
Bob Perez, however you say his name, with Sooner Scoop.
Yeah, that guy.
He's the one that that has this up.
Okay.
So
I guess the big question is defensive coordinator hire.
Yeah, there's been some names thrown out there.
Who's it gonna be? I even heard a rumor that
Dan Lanning.
I've heard that rumor too. Now, I've heard the rumor that Kirby Smart wants
Muschamp.
Muschamp. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of encouraging Lanning to look around.
Come on down.
Well, that'd be a win-win.
Heck, I wanted him as the head coach.
I know. That'd be a win-win.
What better?
You got your cake and you could eat it too there. I mean, that'd be fantastic.
It's in the heat of the moment and it's upsetness with what was going on or what happened before. But if you step away, and if that does happen, and you have, let's say you have coach coordinator combination of Venables, Lanning, and Jeff Lebby. I'm sorry.
It doesn't seem fair in some
But
places.
That is an upgrade.
Feels like it.
Uh-oh. My source here.
We got a source.
DC is not Lanning.
That's confirmed not Lanning.
Who's
your source?
Same one that hooked me up with the information on Brandon Hall.
It's not like Jim's Thunder guy.
Oh, look at this.
You're unwilling to tell me who it is.
Hey, this is my Venables guy.
Your Venables guy.
He said
Come on.
Can't say who yet.
Oh God, you can't. You gotta help it. You gotta feed us some more than that. Well, at least you have a source. My source is coming from the guy who works at a car dealership. Coming from a guy who works at a car dealership. I got all kinds of rumors from that guy. Apparently that made the deal with Rattler and his cars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's been some, I guess he has an inside source. Apparently he's the go-to guy when a coach needs a car or
We'll see if we can get who and just not tell anybody, and we'll know and we'll sound smart.
Yeah.
This is so much fun. It's better to be in the loop than out.
You're gloating now. That's all you're doing. You're gloating.
It's better to be in the loop than out of it.
Now there's already the speculation of, now that Lebby is coming to OU, will Arch Manning be in the
I read a bunch of that today.
It really depends on what Williams decides to do. It definitely doesn't hurt.
Yeah, does it, though?
You get Lebby on board?
Well, I mean, does it?
Or are you still waiting for Joe Brady to find out where he goes? And does that affect
things? I wonder if that's what Williams is doing.
Waiting on Brady?
On the Joe Brady front.
Yep.
But, you know, you see him in all the different games and whatnot, so that's good stuff.
I mean, it makes me think, does he want to leave gracefully where the students go?
Where they don't hate him.
They don't hate him.
We'll see.
About the truth students of, and fans. Here, so
the truth of it is, I mean, it's a totally important keep because of the talent that he has. Could be, you know, NFL type stuff. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. And when you have the turnover that's happened and the philosophy switch that has happened.
Yeah, does Lebby's philosophy?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about just overall program philosophy.
Well, yeah.
From shiny things that go fast on offense to a toughness, people are going to leave because that's not what they signed up for. And then you find the ones that do, you know. And,
well, that's
and if
okay.
it's and if
yeah,
it's Caleb Williams, it's okay. You move on and you find somebody else. You hate it. Not saying that. I mean, it would stink to see, you know, what could be of that talent happen somewhere else when it started out right here. If you're an OU fan, but that's just the way. It's the cost of what happened and the way that it went down. And so, you know, you hope it doesn't, but if it does, it's not the end of the world. It's still Oklahoma football, and it's just there's more fish out there. Maybe they're not as good, but maybe now the sum of the parts the whole will be better than the sum of the parts instead of the other way around.
Yeah.
The NIL, man, that Texas story, I read a bunch about it yesterday. It was pretty crazy, and it's a pretty genius idea, actually, from, you know, some boosters down at Texas and to run this the way that it is. Pretty incredible. So basically they're setting up a charity that does good in the community with the offensive linemen that are recruited to and play for Texas being the face of it and being the ones that get out and do the charitable work. And for that, they get compensated $50,000 a year, and obviously this is it's available because of NIL. You know that maybe that's the good, and sure maybe this is a way for some Texas boosters to figure out a way to pay players to get them on campus. You know, there's nefarious to anything, no matter how pure it is. There's always going to be that slant to it, at least in the minds of some. But to me, if they really – now, if they make one appearance for 10 minutes and that's it, then this is a total sham and it sucks. But if they actually do some things out in the community to help some people, I like this way more than some kid going to Ohio State for $1 million in a pickup. Because at least it does some good. Now, the one thing about it is, though, it's still tied back sort of to the university. And then how do the universities and how does college football get away with this and still be a non-taxed entity?
That's beyond my knowledge, dude. I don't know. My question is, does this have an opposite effect to some recruits?
Meaning?
I don't want to go serve on a soup line.
100%. I'm sure it will.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, it's just the nature.
I'd rather have the
truck.
It's
the nature of life now.
I'd rather have the truck and
why can't I get the money for nothing?
The 30-second ad.
I didn't get the money for nothing.
Exactly. And the chicks for free.
Well, there you go. I see what you did there. No, that's your point is well taken. But in certain ways, what Venables said in his press conference, I think it ties into maybe down at Texas, and this could be beneficial. If they find the guys that are willing to do this, does that make them a better program? Because then the people are down there for something that's not just them. Because isn't that kind of the knock? You know, these guys, it's more of a selfish me, and country club attitude where they're actually going out and you know, getting involved in some of the maybe grimier things or just because of what they're doing, you know, trying to help people that are less fortunate. Not grimy in the sense that it's underhanded or illegal, just the way life is. I think it's interesting. And I also think that moves like this and the way the NIL is structured, which is not structured, but there's no rules. It's just the wild, wild west. You mentioned the NCAA. I think we are seeing or in the middle of the end of it. The NCAA and its association with anything to do with major big-time college football is coming to an end because it is becoming the haves and the have-nots more and more and more. And who more than us two when discussing this stuff, whether it be NIL, whether it be paying players, whether it be transfer portal, whatever it was, who are the ones that were beating the drum of this right here? It separates the haves and the have-nots even more. And here's what I think it's going to do. I think it's going to separate them so far as to there's going to be totally different levels of college football. You're going to have 20, 25, whatever that is, that make the highest commitment. They're just going to play by themselves, and they're going to put a couple of fingers up in the NCAA and say, see ya. And there's going to be teams that want to do that can't because they just can't do it financially.
Right, can't afford it.
And so, you know, this is separating a lot of different things. I mean, the concept of conference realignment from OU and Texas going to the SEC and all the dominoes that affected, I think that pales in the comparison of what's happening if the NIL doesn't get regulated to some degree and some rules made. You're talking about not only conference realignment, but blowing up college football as we know it. You know, it's one thing to OU and OSU not to be in the same conference. It could be a total other for them not even to be basically playing the same game.
Yeah. It's a shift. It's definitely a shift in the game. Again, don't think NCAA has any way to stop it. There's really no way for the NCAA to stop this shift. Is there?
I don't think so.
Not at all.
I don't think so because, quite honestly, the NCAA hasn't been involved in college football outside of a sanctioning body ever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just what it is. It is what it is. And the universities, you know, with no rules here, I mean, what is there to police? You know what I'm saying?
I know. I don't know.
I guess maybe
because they can come out and measure the field, make sure it's a
well, or you know, up to hold each other accountable for kids actually going to school. You know, I guess that's one way that the NCAA is still kind of there, as far as graduation rates and keeping, you know, programs on the up and up there to be able to compete. You know, in the playoffs or in bowl games or in the tournament if it's basketball, but this NIL thing. And everybody, I just want everybody that was screaming from the hilltops to pay the players, I don't want to hear you screaming when it ruins your favorite sport.
Yeah.
Because that's where it's headed.
Yep.
It's headed to a little bit level underneath NFL as far as professionalism in sports. And that's where it's going. And, you know, for those of you wanting Johnny to get an extra $10 to go out on the weekend, you may have just ruined college football. but feel good about it because he gets an extra burger.
Yep.
So, anyhow, man, fun show.
We didn't even talk about Knowles.
Yeah, Jim Knowles left to go to Ohio State.
He left OSU to go to OSU.
Second coordinator to do that in the last couple years. Mike Yurcich did the same thing not too long ago.
Hmm.
We got plenty of time to talk about that tomorrow.
But he won't start till January 2, so will he coach the Fiesta Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, neither team. What does it matter? They're not in the playoff.
Right.
Get carried off the field like Buddy Ryan did after Super Bowl 20 by the Bears, by the defense of OSU. All right, everybody, have a great day. I'm headed to Tradio. Skinny on Sports 98.1 FM, the sports animal. Oh, I will.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.